everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Third day of March 2021. I'm very concerned, Tom, about this red flag warning. The first of the year, the temperatures 10 degrees above normal, dry as a bone, and high winds. Later in the hour, we'll get a direct update from Phoenix and the spokesperson for the Department of Forestry and Fire Management. Here we go again. We've had one rain event all winter, and we're off and running, unfortunately, with another fire season.
Particularly the dry conditions. We're not really that hot, but boy, no. It, like you say, it is bone dry out there, and it'll go up like kindling if something is, you know, lights it.
Yeah, we've already had a couple of small wildfires, and temperatures will be in the mid-80s by the weekend. Too early in the year for those kinds of temperatures. The Buckmaster Show, we're in year 11 now in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Our radio station, you can find us on 1030. That's Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We take the piggyback live feed from kvoi.com. We have an archive on that website, buckmastershow.com, that goes back to the first week of January 2011. So there's a lot of content, over 10 years of content on the website. We also have all of our podcasts available for you. They're posted within an hour or two at the conclusion of the program. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line and meet up with Ward 6 Democrat Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek. Steve, how are you?
Well, I can attest to the wind and the dryness, and the combination is doing what it's supposed to do. It's throwing pollen all over the place, too. So in addition to the fires, we have the honor of being able to breathe in all the pollen in Pima County. So, yeah, it's going to be a nasty allergy season as well, evidently.
This is a tough time right now. We're at the one-year anniversary of when COVID really came on full blast. You have Texas and Mississippi leadership there lifting COVID restrictions, despite the fact, Steve Kasachek, that those two states show the biggest increase in C-19 cases and the lowest vaccination rate. Meanwhile, Brazil is out of control, highest numbers ever recorded in that country, with a new variant of COVID-19. This thing is not over.
I 100% understand people's COVID fatigue. I totally get it. But when I have people say to me, and I have, that telling me to wear a mask is anti-business, that I just throw my hands up. So I don't even know how to respond to something like that. What is anti-business is, I think, is what's happening in Texas, in Mississippi, is the people ignoring the fact that we have variant strains right now that are popping up. 4 weeks ago, there were fewer than 500 nationwide. We're well over 2,000 now cases from the variant strains. They didn't even exist in Arizona 3 weeks ago. Now they're here, and they're expanding in numbers. I had a piece in the Star on Sunday that spoke to Governor Ducey withholding literally north of $300 million worth of federal funds that are earmarked to the state for distribution to counties around the state and cities for testing and vaccinations. We're at a point right now where we're spending down our reserves. The city is out of our CARES money. The county is into their reserves, and they're spending into their general fund to continue testing. And for the governor to be sitting on over $300 million, instead of allocating them out to local jurisdictions so we can continue testing and expand the vaccination process, is, to me, unconscionable. People feel as though we maybe shouldn't be testing anymore, to be focusing completely on vaccinations. I fundamentally disagree, because if you're not testing, you don't know who's got the COVID. You don't know who's got a variant strain. You don't know where to begin the isolation, the contact tracing. You don't know where the hot spots are. So we have to do both. And, you know, what Texas is doing, Mississippi is doing is completely irresponsible. And, you know, we're going to see the result of it. I mean, a virus does what it does. We don't set the rules. It does. And it's science. It's not politics. And it won't be long before we see the numbers popping up yet again in both of those states. Hopefully not around here, but we have to get the money from Ducey to get the testing and vaccinations rolled out.
And then
the critics,
Steve Kasachek, would say, there you go again, you and others blaming the state for our problems down here. What do you say to these critics, Steve Kasachek?
The federal government allocated $400 million for testing to the state. We have got Pima County just last week was allocated 14 of that $400 million. That's not politics. That's not me blaming the state. That's me pointing out the fact that these are dollars that were not earmarked to pay for Governor Ducey's tax cuts. They were earmarked for testing and vaccinations. They've gotten another several million dollars for vaccinations that they're sitting on as well. So this isn't blaming the state. It's pointing out the fact that they have money that came to them from D.C. It came to them from D.C. specifically for testing and vaccinations, not to send it out to the locations where they're doing the most testing. And frankly, Pima County has been paying out of their own general fund to continue the testing and vaccinations. Just yesterday, they had a study session at the County Board of Supervisors to talk about whether or not they could even continue a testing program because they're spending down their reserves. And they deferred it for a couple of weeks, but at some point there's going to be push is going to come to shove, and the county and the city are going to say, you know what, if you need to get tested, it's going to cost you money, and you can blame the state on that. And so I am pointing the finger at the state. I'm pointing it at Governor Ducey. I didn't invent the idea that he has $300+ million of testing money that he's sitting on. It's sitting up there. Allocate the money out so we can keep going on this thing. This is not behind us, as you correctly pointed out. This is not behind us, and it's not. And for businesses that want to reopen, our economy is not going to recover until this is in the rearview mirror. Pretending it doesn't exist doesn't make it not exist. And that's the reason we need these dollars locally.
And you heard the sound bites on the CBS Network News from Texas. I'm tired of the whole thing. It's gone on a year. I believe I'm paraphrasing, but I think it's pretty accurate, the woman they quoted in Texas. We've worn the mask for a year. It's over. That's what they say.
We are all tired of it. But that doesn't make it not happen. That just because you ignore it doesn't mean it's not there. It's the same argument about taking away people's health care. It doesn't mean people aren't going to get sick anymore. So, I mean, it's a silly, ignorant, foolish argument to say, I'm tired of it. I'm going to take my mask off, ignore the fact that the variant strains are popping up all over the nation, all over the world, but all over the nation. They're in Arizona now. Just because you're tired of it doesn't mean that we can ignore it, because it's going to pop up again. And God, we don't want to see the healthcare industry continue to be overrun by this. I mean, I know people, and I'm sure you do too, who've worked in COVID units, in healthcare institutions all over this community. They are tired of it. They are the ones who are tired of it. You know, all we've got to do is wear a mask for a few hours a day when we're out in public. How'd you like to go to work and work a 12-hour shift in full PPE gear, taking care of people who are on ventilators and dying? Those are the people who are tired of it, and those are the ones who I've got the compassion for.
And as Dr. Hines pointed out a week or so ago on this program, nurses are saying at the end of shifts, they have had enough and they can't take any more death and dying. We are going to have a shortage of healthcare professionals when this is over that this country has never seen before.
And Matt, I believe, is 100% correct about that. What we keep talking about social isolation. We keep talking about the impacts of that, and you know all the things that are accurately collateral damage from COVID. But what I don't see enough conversation about is, what are we doing for the analogy of PTSD for the healthcare workers who've been working in those conditions for a year now.
That's right.
And so I'm sorry for the lady in Texas who doesn't like wearing a mask, but think about the healthcare workers who are doing, I mean, good God, you've seen the pictures of them going the way they have to dress up to, you know, gown up and, you know, gel in, gel out and all that kind of stuff before they treat patients who then die without family around them. I mean, the psychological trauma that these people are going through is just immense. And I'm so done with people who are saying, my liberties, I'm not wearing a mask. Now let them serve some volunteer time in a COVID ward for a week and then see if they say the same thing.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation with Steve Kasachek. It's Buckmaster in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. I want to talk about some comfort food right now. We could all use it, Steve. That's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. People ask me, Steve Kasachek, what in the world, Bill, is a Kringle? Well, it's a Scandinavian pastry in an oval shape, and its delicate, flaky layers are filled with luscious, sweet fillings. If that doesn't sound good to you right now, I don't know what does. They're up at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They're open for lunch right now. They open at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast. They encourage you to take a look at the website, monasdanishbakery.com. You can order ahead on the website. You can phone them. Walk into the bakery if you'd like. If you'd like to sit down and eat in the bakery, there's some limited seating in there, and there's plenty of room out on the patio. Thank you to Steve, the owner and chief baker, for his support of what we do here on the Buckmaster Show. More with Steve Kasachek on this midweek edition of Buckmaster. Be right back. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined, because without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowell and Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back, Buckmaster Show. Busy hour as usual. We try to put a lot of content into this midday program that we've been doing now for over 10 years. Steve Kasachuk, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat Ward 6, with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Let's go to Pat, who has called us on the live line with a question for Councilman Kasachuk. Go ahead, Pat.
Yes, about a week ago, I called the TUSD office and asked whether everyone connected with the different schools with TUSD had been able to get vaccinated or were set up to be, and I was told yes. And it seems to me you are contradicting that. I'm just trying to find out what the facts are.
Okay, Pat.
I'm not contradicting whether or not TUSD employees were vaccinated. What I'm saying, because I don't know that, whether or not they have, what I'm saying is that we have a community full of people who are in vulnerable categories. This week, Maricopa County is dropping down to ages 55 and up. Pima County is still at 65 and up and just recently dropped down to there. We have people in age groups and demographics all over the community who haven't even gotten a sniff at a first vaccine. What I'm saying is that for the state of Arizona to be sitting on over $300 million in both testing and vaccination money and not allocate it out to the jurisdictions that it was intended for is just wrong.
Yeah, and we don't know what the numbers are specifically at TUSD. I know that the last time a week or so Dr. Trujillo was with us, it was about, I think he said maybe 50% of the employees had been vaccinated. But you're right, Steve Kasachuk. So many people in this community still have not been able to get an appointment, and they are in the vulnerable group. So we've got a long way to go.
And here's another point, and you're right. And another point is very simply that the Pima County Health Department was doing some mobile testing sites, and they were actually going out into the field, into the rural areas of the county, and addressing people who aren't going to be able to get on the state registration site and make an appointment for weeks in advance and then find transportation to get down, in categories of people who are in the COVID hotspots right now. They have had to roll those back and pull back on the number of mobile sites they can do now because they're out of funding. And so if we want to get beyond this, we have to make sure that we're touching the lives of people who are right now in hotspots, right now in vulnerable categories. And the way to do that is not to withhold money. And I'm not talking about chump change, and I'm not inventing the number either. They are sitting on over $300 million in Phoenix for testing. And I believe the number is 60-something million for vaccinations. Those dollars have got to get out to the jurisdictions that need them, or we're not going to get past this.
I see former Councilwoman Karen Ulick is now back with you on the council. Steve Kasachuk, she served, let's see, three terms as the Ward 3 councilwoman. She has said that she's not going to stand for election. This is a placekeeper seat. First of all, let me ask you, and you have announced you are seeking, will be standing for re-election. Is there going to be an election in 2021 in the city of Tucson?
That's the question of the hour, and I sure wish I could give you a straight answer. I'll give you the Reader's Digest version of how we got here. A few years ago, the state legislature passed a bill that tried to move the city of Tucson, and it was, let's be clear, it was aimed at the city of Tucson, to even number year elections. Right now we have our elections in odd number years. There was a threshold built into that bill that said if if in our next mayoral election we didn't reach a certain percentage of voter turnout, then we would have to go to even year elections. We did not. And so we asked the voters if they wanted us to simply roll over and change our charter and go to even, or if they wanted us to challenge it and defend our charter. The voters overwhelmingly said protect the charter. And so we went to court. Right now the question before the state Supreme Court is, should the state law prevail or should the local charter prevail? We have been waiting. The arguments were made in front of the state Supreme Court back in January. It is now first week in March. We're still waiting for an answer. I was waiting on them to begin, all the campaign activity. Because frankly, if we're not going to have an election in November of this year, then I don't want to waste people's time or my own. We don't know yet. The signature gathering has to start at some point because the signatures are due in the first week in April. And so that's the reason I announced we could find out this afternoon, or we could find out at the end of March, that the state Supreme Court says yes or no, you're having an election. But I just decided, I can't wait any longer. It's not, it's not so easy going out and getting signatures, especially in a time of COVID. And so I began the process. But we simply don't know. And that answer can come in the mail today or in 3 weeks.
And it would be a postponement if the court says that it should not be in the odd year elections. It would be postponed to 2022.
Right. And so what would happen is that we would not have an election November of this year, but we would have the election November of 22. And so there are two of us in office, members and me, who are running, and we don't know who's going to run in Ward 3 yet. We would simply roll over and run next year if we choose to.
Brittany called Steve Kasachek. She has a question about voting. Go ahead, Brittany.
I just had a question, wondering if you guys plan on replacing the current voting system in Arizona, or if there's any plans to do that.
Okay, Brittany, we'll see what Steve has to say about that.
System as in mail-in?
I think she was referring about ending all voting machines.
Correct, yes.
Yes. I guess they would not have voting machines. Brittany is concerned about that. Steve, are you still there?
Seems to me, yeah, I am. Seems to me that when you show up at a polling place, if you choose not to participate in the mail-in voting, you need to have a way to cast your ballot there. And I had not heard that anyone's contemplating that. Is that something in front of the state legislature now?
I don't know. I know there's several bills that are dealing with what are being called voter reforms, but I don't know if they've actually gone to the point where they would replace the voting machines. Real quickly, Steve Kasachek, about cell towers. These are very unsightly, and apparently they're going up all over town. Is there a way to do mini towers?
Well, that's what they're calling these. Unfortunately, mini is 35 feet tall, M-I-N-I, and in addition to that, they're M-A-N-Y. There are many of them. And I will say I have a very close relationship right now with Verizon. They're open to co-location on TEP utility poles. Frankly, TEP has been the bottleneck on that. They're open to co-locating on existing street signs like stop and yield signs. The city of Tucson was the bottleneck on that. So we've got some momentum going so that we can minimize the number of these new poles that go up. But frankly, Verizon is the only one that's at the table. AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, Cox, they're not at this point. And the state legislature has passed preemptive legislation saying that the city's voice is virtually nil when it comes to these, and so has the FCC. The various levels of government, federal and state, are treating this as though it's the 1960s space race, and we have to roll out 5G as quickly as possible, or we're going to lose the international race. My concern is that the way these are going up is diminishing the value of
Steve, I think we might have you cut out there for a second, but let me say quickly, this 5G issue, can they put a tower up virtually in someone's front lawn wherever they want?
Not in their front lawn. This is not on private property without their permission. But they can put it up in public rights of way right in front of your house. And that's what people are objecting to. And I don't blame them.
Again, how tall are they?
35 feet tall, but that's not the end of it. You also have a 4-foot tall TEP meter box next to it, and then a 5-foot tall orange and white PVC CenturyLink fiber pole next to it. So they are ugly. There are solutions. It's just getting the utilities to the table. And frankly, they don't have to come to the table because the way the state and state law and the FCC have put the game in place is that they can ignore everybody and just move on forward. And that's what they're doing. There is minimal impact on them to simply throw up a pole and move on. Trying to get them to have a barter.
Quickly, how many poles, any idea in the city of Tucson, how many poles are they thinking about?
There will be thousands because this is literally, it is Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, Cox, all of them.
All right. Steve Kasachek, thank you very much. Stay well, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Steve Kasachek with us, the Ward 6 Democrat on the Tucson City Council. Coming up next, we're all concerned about fire season. We'll get the very latest from Tiffany Davila from the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management. Tiffany will be on our live line after we take the break. Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Be right back. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Green Things is the go-to place for all of your spring gardening needs. 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, and annuals. And they've got it all. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. They're just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. If you have not been there, perhaps you've driven by on River, take the turn and check it out. I think you'll be very impressed, especially not only with the what they have in the varieties of plants and flowers, but the shops, the five shops at Zocalo Village with all that beautiful furniture, much of it handcrafted from Latin America. It's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Well, unfortunately, the red flag alert has been hoisted for the first time this year in southern Arizona. Temperatures running about 10 degrees above normal. We're having moderate to high winds, bone dry conditions. Not a pretty picture for so early in the year. Let's go now on the live line to Phoenix and Tiffany Davila. Tiffany is with the, she is a spokesperson for the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management. Tiffany, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me today.
Tiffany, it used to be we had a fire season where we really got a little break, December, January, February. We've already had some wildfires here in southern Arizona. That fire season has kind of turned into a 12-month year season.
Absolutely, and we've been saying this for a while now, and by a while, I mean a few years. We are starting to experience fires year-round, not just in our peak time of the summer. Yesterday alone, the department ran on about five fires across southern Arizona and over by Gila Bend. So, and that was, you know, we did have some wind yesterday, but nothing like what we're going to experience today. So I really hope that's not a taste of what's going to be coming in the next couple of months. But unfortunately, the signs are there. We have very dry conditions. We did have some moisture early on in January, but really, no pun intended, that was just a drop in the bucket to what we need. 96% of the state is in severe drought. So as you can see, it's just not a good outlook at this point.
We had that two to three day event here in southern Arizona with some moisture in early January, and then there's been nothing. It seems like every time, Tiffany, the Weather Service puts up like a couple of days ago, we had a 20 to 30% chance of rain. Now, when you get close to the day itself, like today, it's gone. It's a very difficult situation, and we're all fearful of a repeat of what we saw here in early June, the fire event in the Catalinas that stretched over a month, and it was a horrible situation.
It was, and unfortunately, southern Arizona seems to take the brunt of the fires every year. You had the Bighorn last year. We had the Sawtooth a couple years ago, or the Sawmill, excuse me, a couple years ago. So it's just the fuel conditions, the topography, the landscape, the conditions in that area, whether that's precipitation or weather. It's very warm down in southern Arizona, oftentimes warmer than where we are. So again, you know, we already had multiple fires yesterday, one in Bisbee, one out by Aravaca. So we just really need some widespread moisture. And you're right. Every time the Weather Service or the meteorologists say, you know, we're hoping for a chance of rain, as we get closer to those days, it just seems like it dwindles down to slim to none as far as the chances go. So again, we really need that widespread precipitation. We had a terrible monsoon season last year, if we had any monsoons even. And we just really need to look at the outlook over the next couple of months as far as precipitation goes and temperatures go to kind of see what's going to align for us in the next coming months as far as the fire season goes.
What reports are you getting from your people in the field as far as the forests? Are they, again, could they be considered tinder dry at this point?
Yes, we just had a briefing this morning We're looking at least the next couple of months with little to no precipitation.
Wow.
And unseasonably warm conditions. So the fuel that's on the ground now is from the past couple of years when we had high winter precipitation. It will dry out very quickly as soon as the temperatures increase. We might see some green up for a week or two, and then that fuel is going to dry up very quickly. So expect, you know, high activity, not just in southern Arizona or central like we saw here in the Phoenix area last year, but pretty much across the entire state just due to the conditions, their widespread drought conditions, and again, that lack of moisture or snowfall.
What are we learning from these events like we had here in southern Arizona and the Catalinas? Are we going into a fire suppression mode the moment something pops up? What are the fire suppression, what's the game plan with fire suppression now in Arizona?
We are ready 12 months out of the year, 365 days. We've got fully staffed engines across our five districts, one of which is in Pima County, along with our federal partners, the BLM and the Forest Service. Everyone is ready. It's just a matter of bringing on increased resources when we hit that higher peak, say end of April, beginning of May through the start of monsoon season. So that's when we'll bring in all of our aircraft, our seasonal employees that will help with our crews and staff extra engines for us. Again, if we need aircraft, we can get it. We just don't have anything here right now. We will bringing in all of those resources closer to springtime, say April, beginning of April, mid-April.
What's your schedule like when the fire season really cranks up? You must be on 24/7 call. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's more than accurate. I don't sleep. I am the public affairs officer for the entire state as far as state lands go with the department. We could be working a fire in Cave Creek, and I could also have another fire going on in Pima County. So I am very busy, calls at all hours, not only from the public, but from the media. One of our most important tools is the media because they help us get our notifications out as well. You know, and then you've got maybe media calling from the East Coast, and that's, you know, 2 a.m. our time. So I'm very busy, don't get a lot of sleep, but that's okay. I really enjoy what I'm doing and serving the citizens of this great state.
Tiffany, we'll be calling on you. We'll be joining in that chorus of media people. I'm glad we could connect with this initial visit with you, and we hope to have you on the program as we get further along into the season. Thank you very much, Tiffany.
Thank you.
Tiffany Davila. Tiffany is the spokesperson for the whole state, really, for the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management. We're all keeping our fingers crossed that this current red flag alert will not result in a big wildfire, really any wildfire, because temperatures are above normal, the winds are kicking up, and again, it's bone dry in the state of Arizona. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Next up, this research from the University of Arizona. Folks have been really pounding down the alcohol during the pandemic. We're going to hear about that right after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster. We're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. I was looking at the vaccination rates across the country. Second only to Alaska, New Mexico has now put vaccine in the arms of nearly one in four of the residents of the Land of Enchantment, and that bodes well for folks thinking of a visit over to Silver City. And we have good news. They're doing a slow rollout, so we can once again send our listeners over to our great sponsor, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, only a three-hour drive from Tucson. So now is a good time to start your planning for things to do, some beautiful spring hiking. The elevation of 5,000 to 7,000 feet over there makes for a beautiful outing in Silver City and Grant County. Also, places to stay, you'll find it all on their website, southwestnewmexico.org. The ongoing pandemic has given rise to a significant and alarming trend of increased alcohol use and abuse, especially among younger adults, men, and those who have lost their jobs. That, according to a new study by the University of Arizona Health Sciences researchers. The research was led by William Scott Kilgore. Dr. Kilgore is a professor of psychology in the UA College of Medicine, and he's director of the Social, Cognitive, and Affective Neuroscience Laboratory, and he's with us now on the live line. Dr. Kilgore, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. We all suspected that people being cooped up, they and alcohol sales were kind of really through the roof during the past 12 months. But now we have some really research, some good findings that are showing us to the extent folks were pounding down the liquor. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, we started this whole research program back when the pandemic first started. You know, we heard that that the virus was coming and that we needed to start studying mental health outcomes. So we were looking at depression and anxiety and loneliness. And as part of that package, we also looked at alcohol use. So each month we did a large-scale survey on about 1,000 people, and we gave them something called the Alcohol Use Disorders Identification Test. This is a standardized test that examines how much alcohol a person is using and whether it's causing problems in their day-to-day functioning. And what we found was that over the 6 months that we were looking at this, from April to September, that people were showing a steady increase in the level of alcohol problems that they were experiencing. And just to go deeper into it, we also divided the data out to different thresholds or different levels of severity. So we looked first at harmful alcohol use. You know, basically that's the kind of alcohol use that could be causing you some physical problems or perhaps maybe affecting your job a little bit, but it's not highly severe, but it is affecting your life. And we found that by September, after about 6 months of the pandemic, the rates of that harmful alcohol use had doubled relative to the beginning of the pandemic back in April. Then we looked at more severe levels. We looked at probable alcohol dependence. You know, that's essentially the level that you might want to be talking to somebody and getting some help. And in that case, we found that we had about triple the rates of people scoring in that probable alcohol dependence level by the end or by the end of September.
And that one and went, that one went from nearly 8% to almost 30%. That is very alarming, Dr.
Right.
Kilgore.
Absolutely. That's the thing. You know, 8% of people before the pandemic scoring in that range, now we're up to almost 30% of the population. And then if we look at severe levels, these are people that colloquial terms, we might say are having a problem with alcoholism. They need to be in treatment, you know, going to Alcoholics Anonymous or working with a doctor to try to deal with their problem. And we found that the rates of those severe alcohol levels had quadrupled. It was four times as high by September than it was back in April. So we started off around 4% back in April. By the time we get to September, it's up to almost 17% of people were scoring in that level. But again, this is only for people that were under lockdown. That's the other thing to make clear here, is we divided the sample out into people that were not under lockdown and those that were experiencing lockdown. And if you're having lockdown, those people were really the ones that were struggling the most.
When you say lockdown, was Arizona included in this for those three thresholds?
The way that we defined the lockdown was each individual's perception of the local community, whether they were being asked to stay at home, whether they were being asked to not go out except for essentials. So, yes, people in Arizona at times would score in that range, saying that they were being asked not to travel unless it was necessary to go out and go to work or go get groceries or something.
But this was a nationwide survey.
Yes, we actually reached out and got people from all 50 states to participate, and they took the survey, and so we were able to average the data and look across the different states and try to get close to what we'd say a representative sample of the entire population.
Dr. Kilgore, stay with us. Let's take a call here from listener Robert. Robert, you're with Scott Kilgore from the University of Arizona. Go ahead, Robert.
Doctor, I'm sorry to say I'm a case study in this.
Oh, boy.
Ever since the lockdown, I'm trying to have a baby at this point because the combination of beer and constant Netflix, I packed on like 13 pounds in 9 months.
Right. Wow.
And yeah, it's a problem.
Well, so, that's what we're seeing, is it's not that uncommon. You know, this is happening right now for a lot of people around the country.
Yeah, it is a problem. It's not only the weight gain, it's the depression. And something that I'd like to just touch on briefly, Dr. Kilgore, kind of a collective, post-traumatic stress syndrome, not only for healthcare workers who've been on the front line, all the death and dying. I think a lot of people are really kind of just sort of exhausted and freaked out at this point. Some of your thoughts.
Absolutely. We actually been collecting some data looking at post-traumatic stress disorder rates as well with all the other data we're collecting. And on standardized assessments of PTSD, we've seen that the rates have also increased in the same way, especially during the early months of the pandemic. You know, people were really afraid when this pandemic first hit, and it just kept getting worse as we moved into the summer last year, and then toward the fall, we saw those rates of PTSD just continue to rise each month. We haven't had a chance to publish these data yet, but we do have them kind of in the queue of things that we're working on. The nice thing is that more recently, we're seeing that things have leveled out a little bit, so that we're not on a linear incline here where we just keep getting worse each month. It has leveled off, and I think that the fact that we've got vaccines that are available and the rates are starting to come down, but people are feeling a little less scared about it, and the rates of PTSD seem to be on the decline again. And the same thing is true now with the alcohol issue as well, that we've noticed that it's plateaued and to some degree maybe declining at this point.
You know, so many people were working at home during the lockdown, and I'm just curious, were these people drinking on the job?
That's, I think, a big issue that came up when I was pulling this paper together. We dug into it some more, and I haven't published those data either, but we looked at whether people were actually employed or if they were in a non-employed status. And that would include people that were retired or homemakers that are not bringing in an income necessarily. And what we found was it really is the employed people, those who are staying at home. They're stuck in because of the lockdown, and they're trying to do their job. Those people were the ones that were most likely to be showing this increase in drinking, and in particular, morning drinking.
Wow.
Which, that they're drinking more in the mornings to try to deal with the fact they had a lot of alcohol the day before, to try to stave off the symptoms and associated effects of that. And so that's also increasing, that they're having a drink first thing in the morning when they get up. And when you start to add that up throughout the day, you know, you're sitting there on the job, you know, reading emails and doing Zoom calls, and you know, you start adding up the number of hours you can reach out and have a beer when nobody's looking. That starts to add up throughout your day. You know, a year and a half ago, we could all sit in our office and we wouldn't even think about reaching out and having a drink. But now you're sitting at home in your living room, and you sort of have this, you know, I'm the king of my castle. Nobody should tell me not to be drinking in my own home. Yet you're still on the job.
Wow.
You're doing your work, and you wonder, how is this going to affect our productivity as a nation as we go forward for the next year trying to recover from the pandemic? You know, we got to get out of this economic rut we're in, and we need people doing a good job. But if you're sitting at home, you may not be doing the best job if you're a little bit tipsy.
And especially when we hear that one out of three jobs will be online at least for the next year. So, I mean, I have images of somebody logging on in the morning, a time to go to work, and they've got their favorite adult beverage right by their side starting the day. That's not a pretty picture.
It is concerning. I wouldn't say that everybody's doing it, but the rates of that, I think, are increasing relative to where they were a year and a half ago.
Wow. All right, we'll check back with you when you get some more research data in on depression and post-traumatic stress syndrome, because I think those are really problem areas we need to keep an eye on, Dr. Kilgore.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. William Scott Kilgore, professor of psychiatry in the University of Arizona College of Medicine. He's also the director of the Social Cognitive An Effective Neuroscience Lab at the University of Arizona. Some very interesting research, to say the least. That's going to wrap it up, our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow we'll talk with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie and Dr. David Levy's monthly visit, the renowned comet discoverer, former Parade Magazine science editor. Also, we've got the attorney in the house, Don Luce, for his monthly visit, our legal advisor. Coming up next, the Dave Ramsey Show, always entertaining and informative as we learn about how to manage our money. We're managing our time, and we put a lot of content into the hour, and we'll be back with you 12:04 tomorrow. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.